Hey, everybody. Golf Guys, Gunning and McKee. Here we are basking in the afterglow of what was eventually a carnage-filled U.S. Open. J.J. Spahn picks up the win. Big shot Bob McIntyre just on the outside looking in. And you and I loved the third major of the year. Sammy, how's it going, bud?
Doing really well, Gunner. Yeah, you nailed it. Loved yesterday. Locked into the couch for a long period of time. Carnage, exciting moments, bad rulings, people swearing. Whatever you want from a U.S. Open, you got it. And yesterday was an electric couch day. That was one of my favorite rounds of golf I've watched in a really, really long time.
So you mentioned the electric couch day. Let's start there. Me on my day, Father's Day, basking on the couch in the U.S. Open, only to wake up to see Tiger Woods in the year 2008 playing the U.S. Open. I did not know what was going on because of the rain delay. There was so much fabric on those pants. I thought he was about to take off in flight right before my eyes. But just excellent programming decision. So I hate that the rain, you know, abused Oakmont and eventually Sam Burns. But I love that it led to me getting to watch vintage, absolute peak of his powers, Tiger. So just great job, guys and gals. In the truck. Well done.
That was really funny. And I saw, what the kids would say, an extremely rare W, but I saw Skip Bayless tweet right after that rain delay. And we were watching a bunch of bad golf. He's like, I miss Tiger Woods. And it's funny, right? Like seeing him in that moment and just like having it flash back to that. It was just like this is a great final round. To have, you know, all these competitors, and it really felt like literally anyone could win there for an hour right after Burns kind of came back to the pack. But seeing Tiger in his prime and just the shot making and just his aura in general, I was like, yeah, I love golf, but we don't have that. We don't have that, and we'll never have that again. But yeah, it was an awesome decision, and I'm glad they got back underway and finished this baby because I didn't necessarily want it to go into Monday. Although they said, if it had a finish in a playoff, they told Bobby McIntyre that if it had finished in a tie, they would have done the playoff today. So it was a wild thing to see Tiger Woods, and it must have felt like you woke up back in time, like it was like some crappy back in time B movie that you woke up in.
I had no idea what was going on. I'm like, what day is it? Am I even a father? Do I have a kid? Did I dream the last 20-something years?
Am I wearing an Allen Iverson jersey? Like, is this the year 2008 again?
Yeah, what is happening? And then it also, again, the round was great in and of itself, but as true men of the internet that we are, that's one of the great Tiger fist pump gifts. Like, there's many, right? Of course, there's the true, like, bright red that we got, I believe, Sunday of that year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Monday, when you go to the Monday finish. But then with the violent fist pump. But then that one is the very subtle, self-assured yes, right at the end when he hits that putt on 18 to give himself the lead heading into Sunday. All right, we will not do a golf show on the 2008 U.S. Open. If we wanted to, we could do that any day. We didn't need to wait until after the 2025 U.S. Open to do it. I feel like we should probably start with J.J. Spahn, but I kind of just want to start with the golf course in and of itself. Am I being unfair to J.J. if we just start with the golf course and the amount of drama we got because of it?
I think if that putt doesn't drop on 18, which was, I hate to say it, but like upstaged our boy, Nick Taylor, for like one of the best putts to win your National Open ever. Like, yeah. God, that was unbelievable. But I think if he doesn't hit that putt, Gunner, the story of the weekend is the golf course, right? Like, I don't think there's any question. I still think it's a major story. But obviously, when we look back on this, when you go through the amazing Oakmont U.S. Opens, this will be one of the first thing ever to that putt. But if it hadn't have been, I think the brutal conditions and maybe forcing the guys to go out there to, like, in the spirit of finishing this thing on Sunday, when maybe they shouldn't have been going out there. And listen, like, you saw Adam Scott after when he got asked about, he got asked about the course and he said, you know, it's borderline unplayable. And like, I watched the video and I like Adam Scott and he's classy as hell. So I actually kind of was like, he didn't seem like it was sour grapes. He was hesitant to say it, and he didn't want to see, like he said, everybody's playing the same one. But I did have moments where I was like, this is too hard. This is ridiculous. Like, you and I watched these guys up close and personal last weekend at the RBC Canadian Open, Gunner, and they are so unbelievably good at golf. And for them to look like this on, like, you know, in that with those stakes and the way they looked, I did feel like it was a little bit too hard at moments and almost a little bit stupid and unfair. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it was abundantly clear that they had decided that the way to go about this was get this in on Sunday, come hell or high water,
yeah,
short of a playoff. They decided that. Now
it was it was high water, by the way.
Yeah, it was, right. They're like, how about both through hell and high water?
This is hell with high water right now for these golfers.
Now, obviously, different golf courses are made differently. You expect different things in different places. Here's the question I asked Ben this morning when we were talking about this on the Fan Morning Show, which is a wonderful show, and you should get it wherever you get your pods. I asked him, would we feel the same way it was the Open Championship? Now, the difference, I think, is like golf courses are just literally built differently. Like the soil is different. There is different elements of drainage. And that's not to say Oakmont does a poor job. It's just not built on the seaside like those courses are over there. And that's the thing. I think part of the U.S. Open is it's supposed to be tough. It's supposed to be a little unfair. It's supposed to be unforgiving. And once you decided you're going to play, I hear the arguments. And I don't think they're without merit. But I don't care. I think it's fine. You decided to play, and yeah, it was tough, and yeah, it was a slog. Sometimes it's beautiful conditions, and you get a burnt-out Pinehurst. Sometimes it's Shinnecock, and they lose the greens. Yeah, tough. That's the golf course. Sometimes this year, it's in the slop at Oakmont, and that's kind of how I view it.
I do think, Gunnar, that the Open Championship point is a great one, but I don't know. I think when you identify the Open Championship, it's always about the conditions, right? Because a lot of those courses over there, if it's like sunny and nice, these guys are going to shoot 22 under. Like what did Cam Smith beat? Was he 21 under or 20 under?
18.
That's a huge number. So I do think that when you think about a U.S. Open, it's less about the physical conditions for me than it is more about the high rough and the fast greens and the brutal humpback fairways that it's really hard to hit. So I hear your point, but you know, to add on those conditions to an already brutally hard golf course, I did think it bordered on unfair on Sunday. I'm not going to say I didn't love watching the guy struggle. Like the Tyrrell Hatton, when I don't know what hole it was on, but when he's on the left side of the bunker on a downhill slope and then he chunks it over to the other side, he's whacking his club on the ground, he's taking the towel out of his caddy's hands aggressively. Like I did like some of the moments, and it made for great drama because you really had no idea who was going to win. But I would, if I'm a professional golfer, I would have a bit of sour grapes, I think, at some of the things that they had to go through yesterday. But golfers always have sour grapes, so that's kind of the way it is.
Yeah, them's the breaks. Tyrrell Hatton, there was one moment where the fans were almost like, it almost felt like, I'm trying to think of the exact scenario. It's almost like a opposing player, like an away player taking a corner kick. Like they were like, kind of felt like they were getting all over him. And honestly, it's like you're Tyrrell Hatton. You invite some of that into your life. Did you see the clip of him being interviewed and seeing the spawn putt drop in real time?
Amazing.
Incredible.
Amazing.
So he's got this veneer, and it's not a veneer. It's Tyrrell Hatton. It's funny. When you watch him play, he seems much more than mildly aggrieved. And then when you hear him talk, it's like, it's just slightly bothering him, all of this stuff. He's like, and I don't know, general English phrases that he's giving. Yeah. And then to see the demeanor on his face just completely change. This like smile like creeps across it. It's almost like when the Grinch gets his heart and when the Grinch stole Christmas, and he's like,
he's holding it.
Yeah, he's so happy for him. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I did too. So I think my final thoughts would be that I really had my moments of enjoyment, Gunner, and mostly on Sunday. Like, you know, it's the weekend, it's nice in Toronto. Like, you know, you're in and out on Saturday, watched a lot of the Thursday, Friday coverage. But like to sit down and watch that as a one day sort of super slog event, I enjoyed it. But I got to tell you, I wouldn't want to do that every week. Wouldn't want to do that every week. And it's like, as a one-off where it's the hardest thing ever, I like that. That's okay. I understand it yesterday. But going forward, I'm looking forward to watching. Was it Travelers next week? I'm looking forward to seeing some birdies next week. You know, it's going to be, I can't imagine how good it must feel for these guys to go to like a normal golf course that's like normal hard and be like, oh, I can take a run at this pin. Oh, like if I hit it 3 yards left, I'm not in a death trap. Like, that rough is insane. Like, how many times are you sitting on your couch, Cutter? I know I did by myself. Whoa. Every time it goes in the rough, I'm just like, ugh. Like, I literally said, I must have made that sound 100 times. Allie's dad was over. He's like, what's wrong over there? Like, ah, just golf balls flying into thick rough is the reason I'm making those noises. But yeah, that course looks impossible. Imagine being a member there. Like, it's just like, no. You'd be the best golfer of all time.
Yeah, you would. The Neil Shipleys of the world. It's like, there are guys who are members there, though, who aren't professional golfers. And, like, God, they must either be so sick or hate themselves. Or both is the answer.
Well, I mean, being a member at Oakmont would probably rock. Not going
to
lie to you.
No, it'd be good. I'm just saying, it's like, you have to have, and I'm sure they do, you need a place in the area that's not kicking you in the teeth with reciprocal membership. That's all you need.
They need their Lakeview to Toronto Golf Club right across the street kind of situation.
Boy, do they. Yeah. Yes. The old friendly handshake would be nice after a couple of rounds at Oakmont there. All right. We're going to talk about the winner in a second, I swear. Mm. You've kind of hinted at it. Just your thoughts on the Sam Burns ruling situation. I can't recall a guy not getting the immediate benefit of the doubt when a rule situation has risen its ugly head here. This proves, again, U.S. Open not messing around. This isn't the Travelers where they shake his hand and apologize to him for being in this predicament. No, they said, Sam Burns said, I don't like your ruling. And guess what? Another guy came and said, tough. I like the first ruling. Yeah. You're in trouble here. He went Bettman on him. What'd you think?
I did love the second opinion of being like, no, that first guy's a bozo. Let me talk to a non-bozo. And the second guy came over and was like, no, you're the bozo, buddy. Like, I'm not going to give that to you.
Patrick Reed must have been shaking on his couch in horror. Oh, my God. Can you believe this is happening?
What do you think? Like, what was the justification for no ruling? Just that everybody's playing the same conditions? Is that it?
Yeah, if you were going to give him a drop there, I forgot. I've been trying to dig up the tweet since I saw it yesterday. But some pro, like I want to say like a Billy Horschel or somebody of note, was like, the problem with giving Burns a relief here is that you have then opened Pandora's box and everything on the golf course will be deemed needing relief from. And there's nowhere in the fairway to give these guys relief. So you're going to be sending them to the rough, which I don't know if you've heard of the U.S. Open, is not the place anybody should be going for relief. So that's the problem there. It's just, you decide you're going to play in rain. Tough, Sam Burns. That's standing water. I know. Hit the golf shot.
I mean, give him a foot to the left. Club length to the left. Like, I just, and listen, he unraveled, and it's easy to sit here and say, rise above it. But as you and I both know, when you feel aggrieved on the golf course or you get a bad bounce or something happens to you, it can really unravel you, and human nature, it's hard to power through that. I want to say, like, rise above it. If you want to win a U.S. Open, you're going to get bad breaks like our boy J.J. Spahn did, banging one off the stick on two that ended up being a bogey for him. I really do think that ruined his tournament, and he was right in it. Was he tied for the lead with that when he made the double, right? Because out of that lie, it was soppy. He dead pulled it into the rough behind the green, ends up making double. And that really took him out of it. So I'm not going to blame the rules official for his loss of the tournament. There's lots of disasters waiting on the course that could have happened after that. But it really felt like a turning point, and it really felt like it ruined him. So I feel bad for Sam Burns. He was playing great golf all week. He kind of let it get away from him. And yeah, that ruling kind of ruined his old day, I would say.
I'd say you got to be able to bounce back from adversity. I remember, you know, we were in our, and man, it's coming up. We were in the Combe for our lovely annual Alberta pilgrimage.
Oh,
and
yeah.
the kid I was playing in match play, the young buck, was like, oh, you ever had a zin? And I'm like, I have now. And the mental warfare that he unleashed on me, my 35-year-old fatherly body, I was like, but guess what? I had to bounce back. And then I choked the match away like a dog, but I did it like a man on 18. I got my skis back underneath me.
Oh, so what you're saying is that pool of water was equivalent to a 6-milligram zinner that some Alberta youth gave you. That's what happened.
Exactly. That's
okay,
exactly.
I like that parallel.
There's the zin, and then the rules official is also involved, and he's the kid. The kid's like, no, you got to do it. Sorry, you have no choice in the matter. And then another kid in this scenario is like, I agree with this kid. Take the zin. They peer pressured me into it. Okay. That was not the reason why I lost the match. Pulling it left for the first time in my life on 18 was the reason I lost the match. It's okay. I'm still not thinking about it at all. Let's think about the guy that won the U.S. Open with one of Here's where I want to start with this. Before we get into the ebbs and flows of his incredible day and the bounce back, there were so many real sports moments from this. Like, often with golf, we just kind of have to live in the golf world of comparing it to other golf things we've seen. Him having the second half rally. This is Jason Hayward's speech during the Cubs Guardians rain delay-esque of him being able to find a way to bounce back here. Him hitting that putt in what is essentially a walk-off. Like, I have to go to Kyrie Irving hitting the shot against Steph Curry for such a, oh my God, moment to just definitively end a championship like this. It's just, that was the thing about JJ Spahn and the moment you saw to him is, with golf, so often we just have to do the golf comparison. But with him, it really dragged me to other sports places outside of the world of golf.
Yeah, it was... That was a crossover moment. That's one of those ones that, like, no matter what sport you're a fan of, if that shows up on your highlight show, that's one that you're like, how many angles of that have you consumed today? I bet you I've watched 100 videos with people like, I mean, that's the one thing. It's funny. This is a real chicken and the egg situation here.
Yeah.
But I hate watching a big moment when there's 100 phones up. But then I'm the big hypocrite that after is like, oh my God, all these angles are awesome. It's like, that didn't happen by accident, buddy. It's because they all have their phones out. But I did watch a million different angles of it. His reaction, like, I got to tell you, you know, JJ Spahn's been a, you know, tour veteran forever. I think he was as low as 137th in the world last year. He's been a grinder. He's been around. Like, you and I as golf sickos, we know who JJ Spahn is. And, like, he's floated around in other tournaments. But for this... I know it's easy to say it's a life-changing moment, career-changing moment. He can really feel like his life's work of golf is complete, right? Like, there's no, you know, he'll probably be on the Ryder Cup team now with the points that he got from this come in September. Like, that'll be a great moment for him. But, like, I'm sure he's never, there's nothing ever in the world of golf that's ever going to be nearly as good as that. Not saying he's got to quit now or whatever, but he can just have a sense of freedom for the rest of his life that he has this moment and, like, it will be played on highlight shows every, you know, that's in there with all these Masters highlights and U.S. Opens highlights. That is a top 10 moment in any of these major championships. It's incredible for him. Like, just as a guy that, you know, wallowed away on the tour, trying to make cuts, this and that, to have that, that's what's so incredible about golf, is a guy just gets that moment. It's insane, Gunnar. It really, really is insane.
No, it's nuts. It's one of the beautiful things about it. Like, you know, I was talking about this with you. I can't remember if it was just when I saw your beautiful mug, if it was on the last show we did. But, I mean, imagine in Major League Baseball, the idea of, like, U.S. Open qualifying. And it's like, I don't know, pick your, I don't know, it's like Bowden Francis is trying to qualify for the U.S. Open.
Boy,
because
he wouldn't.
He's got through here. No, I know he wouldn't. Numbers would be way too high. But, like, the idea that these guys that in a team sport are fixtures that you just know, but they have to grind. They have to find a way. It can be right there. This guy has lost his card, only kept it because of COVID, was the Order of Merit winner on the PGA Tour Canada, had 1 year where he also won one event and made, or played in one event and made $800 on that tour. The ups and downs that he has gone through. And again, his story is not unique. It's unique for the guy that gets to have the ending where he's the U.S. Open champ. But this story is all throughout the world of golf. I have to let you know about this. I didn't know about this until this morning. Our dear, dear mutual friend, Gord Stellick, actually tabbed me to this. Do you know when he was playing on the Canadian Tour, there was a massive crossover hockey moment with him?
No.
Where he won the Stahl Foundation Open. So I'm looking at a picture of him right now. It is JJ Spahn with the four Stahl brothers because he won
their charity
tournament that is on the now defunct tournament that was on the then Canadian Tour. So yeah, it's like there's just all these little moments, and I love that crossover. I had no idea about that. I knew you would appreciate it. Just
of course, Gord Stellick knows that.
I know
that's
right?
The most Gord Stellick thing ever to know. Like, but that's awesome. I think there's two different types of major winners. Right? Like the legacy ones. And then there's the guys that just like get to have this moment for the rest of their life. And they were probably never, ever reached it. Like, I think, you know, JJ Spahn is obviously really improved. He had the major league choke job in the Players Championship playoff against Rory earlier this year.
Yep.
But like, there's not a lot else other to say that I'm just happy for the guy. And you're watching him after it happened, Gunnar. Have you ever seen anybody in more disbelief? He was shell-shocked, and he's, like, sitting there in that, like, admin tent. You know, it's so funny you have to sit there and, like, do, like, a bunch of paperwork after you right. have the biggest moment of your life. It's hilarious. But he's sitting there, and he just looks like he's does not know what just happened. Like, it didn't sink in for him. He's like, I just hit. How long was that putt? A 50-footer to win the U.S. Open?
60-something.
Yeah, one of the most famous golf courses on planet Earth. You got to be happy for an underdog story and a guy that just seems like a great guy and a grinder, big sports fan. He has the Dodgers. He's the Dodgers book. So, you know, he loves all sports. I was so happy for him, man. I don't have a whole lot else to say other than good for JJ Spahn. And it's been a while since we had one of these sort of underdog major championship winners.
Yeah. And I think I don't know, maybe this is like super unfair, but I just think when you're more familiar, when you know the story or you appreciate it, or there's some connection, because you mentioned there are generally speaking, like two schools of major winners, right? There's the legacy winner, like Adam Scott would have fell into this if he's able to get it done. When Rory gets his, when a guy like Bryson gets his, right? It's, you know, legacy levels are different, but it's a legacy winner. There's also the, like, what the hell was that winners? And Danny Willett at the Masters kind of felt like that, but JJ Spahn feels different.
We all knew what Danny Willett was. That was not a Danny Willett win. That was
right. That was a meltdown.
That was Jordan Spieth rinsing golf balls. That's what that was.
just working at the range in Ray's Creek there. Like, let me see if I can clean a couple more. But yeah, it is interesting because I do think there are the major winners. I think Wyndham Clark, after he put a beating on the Oakmont locker room, I think he feels like kind of one of those style of winners. Like, I don't think we were having the same feels of Wyndham Clark, like when you see it with JJ Spahn. So that's the other thing. I do feel like he's a little different in that way. I do want to talk about some of the other guys that were right there. Where you want to go next? You want to go Hovland or you want to go Scott?
I mean, we'll go Scott. I think we'll go Scott.
Yeah. So Adam Scott, I think it is very safe to say that if you had the like approval ratings of everybody from the gallery there, he was going to be the clubhouse favorite in terms of what the story people wanted to see on Sunday. I think he was very much of that ilk. I will say this is one of those things where I'm feeling my age watching Adam Scott, because you go back 15 years ago and ask me how I would have felt about this. I go, that's fine. The old guy can get one if he wants. But what about Hovland? What about like a Cameron Young? That'd be fun. Get out of here with that take, young Brent. I was very much feeling the pangs of wanting Scott to get it done. He was the guy I was pulling for far and away the most heading into Sunday.
Yeah, it felt like after that rain delay, and, you know, he's a little older and it's just felt like that kind of was just it for me. He was floating around there, but, you know, he made bogey on one, was actually a good bogey on one. He made a longish putt to save bogey. After he bogeys one, I just kind of felt like it was never really going to happen. When he had that eagle putt on, I forget what hole it was, but it just...
Four.
It looked like it was just curling right into the guts, and it kind of makes a left turn. He eagles that, then maybe things change a little bit, maybe a little bit more pressure, and it's one extra stroke, because it felt like every single stroke you needed out there, you needed it. And he just didn't feel like he had it. I don't know. I never really felt after the round started like he was going to win it. Did you?
No, I think you pinpointed the moment exactly. He has that eagle putt, and it's tracking, it's tracing, and it just doesn't get there, and you say, okay, that's probably going to be that. There were a few moments when, I'm trying to think, in the absolute carnage, because he had a stretch of, I believe it was bogey, bogey, double on 13, 14, 15, or 14, 15, 16. Right before that stretch, everyone else was kind of melting down, and he was just among the pack, and I thought, if this becomes a who can melt down the least contest, maybe he can do it. But no, the weather, the rain, it got to his old bones. But I honestly would have thought like the rain was his superpower. You go back to that win at Augusta, and he holes the putt in the playoff, and he's looking so good with that, even though he has that big dumb putter of his. I was thinking that it was gonna, like, you know, harken back to that beautiful bookends, but no, didn't go that way.
Yeah, and it feels like it's gonna be long. It's getting late here for Adam. You know, like, he's not going to have many chances left, and I'm sure he's going to be upset about the way that played out. But yeah, it really never felt like, I did feel like the whole day that Sam Burns was going to win, right? Like, even before he got that ruling, he hits that in the fairway, you're like, okay, here we go. and he ends up making double, but I really did feel like he was the one that was going to win it, especially after the winner shoots 40 on the front gunner. 40.
Yeah.
And then he shoots a 32 in the back, which is unbelievable to turn things around, including that drive on 17. Oh, my God. Swing of his life. So, I you know, to shoot a 32 after going 40 out, yeah, it's great. But I did feel like Burns was going to win it the entire time I was watching.
That's interesting. I definitely had moments that I thought it was Burns, but I was really feeling like it was Victor Hovland's day watching that. Honestly, yeah. I mean, he obviously
and putt, man.
That I know, and I guess my thought was that it's like, yeah, the lies are so bad, they're gonna be so fluffy. He has no choice but to like stab and die at it. But I mean, you look at the back nine that he puts together. It's a 35. So yeah, not what JJ Spahn does, but it's a, I mean, I'll call it a effectively clean card. Like he has one bogey, he has one bird. Other than that, it's pars. If you tell me that a guy is going to do that with the conditions like that at the U.S. Open and he was in the mix, I honestly would have assumed he just wins it. So I don't like feel bad for Hovland. He didn't deserve it. JJ Spahn went out and took that thing and no one deserves it other than him. But yeah, I was really feeling like it was going to be the Hovland day, honestly.
Wow. Yeah, no, I there was a couple moments where I was like, is this Scotty actually going to do this? Is Scotty going to come up here and sneak into this thing? But he just didn't hit one putt. It felt like down the stretch there, he could have got it to plus two or plus one even, but he just couldn't end up hitting a putt. So I thought he had a moment, but I really never thought it was going to be Hovland. I didn't. I had to be honest with you, buddy.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm not too, this isn't Rory. I'm not too broken up by it. I will say, just me and you talked about this, we can go pretty deep on the board before we get to a storyline that I had zero interest in. Like JJ Spahn, incredible winner with the way he wins it, especially.
Yeah.
Then you have McIntyre, a guy who would have ripped off his own, the Canadian and the U.S. Open in a 12-month run.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Obviously, Hovland would have been a great story. Cameron Young is maybe not like super front of mind for most people, but the second he wins a tournament like this, then we're just on like rockstar ascension mode, because then all of the like, oh, he was T2 at the Open, that now matters, as opposed to just like an afterthought thing. We've already talked about Hatton. Rahm would have been awesome. Scheffler, Burns. And then we get to like the Ben Griffins of the world, and I think we can stop there. Carlos Ortiz is the only guy inside the top 10 that would have been a meh winner from storyline perspective. And that doesn't even include the like Adam Scotts of the world who ejected themselves later on in this thing, and Koepka and Schauffele. It's just, it was a who's who. It was an old school rock star major board.
Absolutely. And I would like to give a shout out to Nick Taylor, who they stopped showing. Totally, but he was playing. He was, of course, as is tradition. But he was playing with Scottie Scheffler, T23 plus eight. That's a nice paycheck for our boy. Too bad about Connors, who had to withdraw because of, I think, a wrist issue.
Wrist.
I mean, if you got a sore wrist and you're going in that rough, I don't think you want to keep playing. And Pendy, he was T38, and so all four Canadians, I think, didn't. And Hughes made the cut too. So four Canadians that were in the field, all four of them made the cut at that tournament. That's an incredible accomplishment. So just wanted to give a quick shout out to that as we were talking leaderboard. Gunner.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Do you want to talk about Rory?
Yeah, I was going to ask you. The way I was going to set it up was like, was that the single worst top 20 in golf history, at least the way? And I was about to say the way it's covered, the way it felt, the way I saw it play out, the way he's talking about it. You would have thought that he somehow finished dead last on Friday, and as punishment, they made him stick around all weekend. Not that he made the cut on the number. This is my man is lost. He is going through it. Well, I've seen great golfers lost in the wilderness before, but I at least understand that. I have kind of worked myself into a mental place where I think I get where Rory's at, but man, it's a dark spot. This is nuts. I am at a loss for words for the space my man is in right now.
I can't believe that Rory McIlroy, of all people, is upset with the media. Like, it's unbelievable. Has any pro athlete got more rosy coverage in the history of sports in their profession? Like, there's one sort of bad story comes out about how his driver was not correct. There's one sort of bad story comes out about him, and he immediately like is like, I'm frustrated. It's more of a frustration with you guys. Like, he's smashing tee markers. He's throwing clubs. Like, this is, of all the outcomes after the Masters, this is my dead last outcome. I honestly feel like there might be something else going on in his life off the course, because the way he's acting after achieving his life's goal, like, there's one thing to be not be motivated, Gunner. I understand that. But to be acting like this and saying, like, I didn't even know if I wanted to make the weekend, I just wanted to get out of here, all this, it's been really surprising to see the way he's acted. It's been pretty, honestly, like, kind of petulant, buddy. Like, I've loved to make fun of Rory, and I love to make fun of him to you, but there's been a lot of ammo, bud. Like, it's been a really bad, kind of weird few weeks for Rory.
Zero pushback, zero argument from me. The only thing I can think of to explain this is, and man, it's like, it is a dark place to be at if you're Rory, but it's like sometimes you put your whole life into something. And, you know, for some people, maybe it's like they want to own their own home. For some people, they want to start a business. You want to have a family. You want to get a promotion at work. And sorry, I'm going full cowherd here, I know.
Yeah.
But that you get the thing. And guess what? You wake up and you're still Brent Gunning. You're still Rory McIlroy. Any little doubt that was still in the back of your head, guess what? It's still there. You getting a promotion, you having a kid, you owning a house. It doesn't change who you are as a person. The world still exists. Like, food all of a sudden isn't perfect. You're not made of solid gold. You're still just a regular human that has to go live your life. And I sometimes think it's a normal human thing to put so much into a goal that, I mean, especially for him, think about how long he's been chasing that thing and how he's felt like he's right there and how we've all talked about it like it would change everything. And he accomplished the thing and we put him in the club, but he still has to get up and get dressed in the morning. And I don't know, like, maybe he doesn't have to make himself something to eat, but he still has to deal with all just the normal things of human. Like, I honestly think that's the only way I can explain it. Cause otherwise it doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't.
No, hey, that's very well said and deep as well, my friend. Like, there's a lot there, but I very shocked to see, like, of the outcomes I didn't have was Rory turning on the media, the golf media, which
nuts.
We have joked about so many times, the church of Rory. Like, you walk into the RBC Canadian Open tent and he's talking, it's like everybody's got their hands and their chin in their hands with like the cartoon hard eyes. Like, I don't know. I think he needs a break. I think that maybe the next time, like the last time I made fun of you for when he peeled out of the U.S. Open after he gagged to Bryson DeChambeau last year, and he peeled out and didn't talk to the media. I thought that was bad when he took the break after that. Now, after getting the career Grand Slam, like, maybe we don't see him until the Open. Like, is he playing this weekend at the Travelers? Is he scheduled to be there?
No,
like,
chance.
He needs some time off. Like, you know, I don't know. I've really, really been surprised the way Rory's acted after winning the Masters. It's not the outcome I expected. Any other Rory thoughts, or can I move to another guy who acted even worse than Rory this weekend?
Okay, we'll get to that. Just last one on Rory. It's like, yeah, he's going to take the break. You probably won't see him till Port Rush. And then guess what? He's either going to be in the thick of it at Port Rush and we kind of move on and everyone goes, okay, we're there, or he's not. And it's crisis mode again, and we're there, and then we don't see him until the FedEx Cup playoffs, and then he talks about how money doesn't matter to him. He needs it to not be a Ryder Cup year. Like, he honestly needs to play one more golf tournament and then go away and realize if this is like, it's, you know, it sounds like you're treating him like a toddler, but it's like, hey, is this something you really want? Like, let's take it away from you and see if you really do truly want it, or if you just want to go be Mr. Dad and be a great husband and like, hey, you've accomplished everything you'd ever asked yourself and we'd ever asked you to do. So I really think that's it. But unfortunately for him, it's a Ryder Cup year, and we all know he's going to
be
in
the heart of it.
Throes of that at Bethpage.
Yeah. He's going to be playing
every scenic route at Bethpage.
Yeah, playing every match, just the number one guy that's going to be in the eye of the storm with every gallery. Just what the guy wants right now, I'd imagine, to be in the eye of an absolute hurricane. Like, well, not the eye. The eye is the calm part.
Yeah, no, that's Ludvig Åberg. Ludvig Åberg is the eye. It's like, oh, he's so handsome and tall. And
I can't even
who's ever hated a Swede?
Yeah, when he walked by us at the RBC Canadian Open, I was like, oh, my God. Whew. Got a little hot under the collar. So Wyndham Clark?
Yes, go.
Why should he ever be allowed back at Oakmont?
I got nothing for you. This is not one of the... I know he won the U.S. Open, but he's not one of the great champions of our game. So for anybody who's listening to a golf podcast who somehow missed this, he went bash mode, beast mode on the lockers at Oakmont. No one has definitively said, like, this is Wyndham Clark. I'm still waiting for someone to put their hand up and said it's definitively not. So that's all the smoke I need to at least run with this on a pod. That's nuts. If he actually did that... That's reprehensible. That's disgusting. It's like we'd feel, imagine what people would have said about Tiger in the peak of his powers when we were in full-blown, like, respect policy policing things with him if he would have done this. And that was Tiger Woods ripping off major after major. You're Wyndham Clark. No, you can learn a lesson. It's just a private golf course. Lord knows they ban people for less.
Yeah, it's if I'm the president of Oakmont, I'd have a hard time letting him back in. If that indeed did happen, and it feels like it happened, enough people are talking about it. Like, you know, the internet has its ways. So I think that's one of the more classless things you can do. And it gave me vibes. What USA hockey team was it?
Nagano.
Was it Nagano? It was like JR and Kachuk, yeah, and all those guys destroying hotel rooms. It's like, that's like the last, that's the biggest a-hole you can be if you do that's something right. like that. So I know it's hard. It's just golf, man. You're a multi-millionaire major championship. Yeah, you played bad. You don't need to smash up a locker room. So that was my final thoughts on that.
Hockey Canada lost in 06, okay, in Turin. And like good Canadians, they just sat there sad.
Yeah.
I don't know. They probably did something not great, but they didn't rip up a hotel room.
They probably destroyed some beers that night, I would imagine.
I was going to say, a hard night for Molson Canadian.
bad night to be a beer, but I think their hotel rooms are safe.
I would imagine. All right, I have like a silly thing to end on, but I don't want it to be the second last thing we say. You got anything else?
Just want to say that had my buddy Keegan in town last week. We played three rounds of golf at three of the GTA's finest courses. Mm. Played Thursday, TPC Toronto, the Hoot course, which you and I have both played multiple times. Yeah. Honestly, like, of course, the North course will get all the pomp and circumstance because it hosts our National Open now. The Heathlands is a great course, but there's nothing like the Hoot. It's fantastic. It's incredibly accessible. You can go there and you can play. You'll have a great time. Went for lunch after at, oh my God, I'm forgetting the name. Two Brothers, is that right? That's a restaurant there now.
That sounds right, yes.
Unbelievable lunch. We watched guys come in on 18 and played first in, which I don't know if you've ever played that game, Gunner, when you're sitting on a patio on 18th. It's the best one ever. You pick a guy in the group in the middle of the fairway, and whoever gets the ball in first to the hole wins. Not score, it's not anything. And me and Keegan bet a couple beers on it, so we had an absolute blast there. Got to play Toronto Golf Club on Wednesday. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's the nicest place on earth. I cannot believe how nice Toronto Golf Club is. Not as accessible, so I wouldn't say that one is a very accessible one. But Friday, of course, had to take my man Keegan across the street to Lakeview. And boy, let me tell you right now, Lakeview is sparkling. The greens are rolling. It's the best. So just wanted to give a quick shout out to three of my favorite Ontario courses, GTA courses. The weather's great. Get out there, play some golf. Had an absolute blast. Game's coming around. Got the cap below 10, Gunner. Getting ready to hit to Lacombe. Getting into midseason form. So happy days playing golf for your boy.
Just what you want, the cap to take a dip after you put in an official number.
Yeah,
for
I kind of feel like a bagger. Like I went in as an 11 and a half, and I literally had three unbelievable rounds that got me down to a 9-8. So hopefully no one in Lacombe's listening to this.
Definitely not at least one guy who has leaf bed sheets literally for me when I stay there. Definitely not them. All right, last one that I want to end on. Yes. My man, Thurston Lawrence. If you could just once a year.
I'm thirsting to see that boiler a little more. Holy smokes.
You. Please, please, for the love of God, once a year for the next 5 to 7 years, can you be floating around the top 20 so I could see those sweet Oakley shades on the back of your hat looking like a third base coach after the sun has gone down and that sweet boiler of his. He first entered our lives at the Open Championship. I am a sucker for these guys, these Euro Tour guys who just appear out of nowhere. And the best part is like, unless everyone else throws up over themselves, we're never going to have to worry about them actually winning one of these damn things. I made the joke all weekend. My wife was going to cut my tongue out by the end of Sunday, but I too am thirsting for Thurston. I love seeing him in the mix. So I had to end on that one, Sammy.
Thurston for Thurston's amazing. Hey, another good weekend for Ben Griffin. Is this guy all of a sudden one of the best players in the world? Definitely going to be a Ryder Cup guy, right?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Better. I'd hate to be a floater in Bethpage because those those aviators.
Another top 10. It's insane. Came out of nowhere.
Because of the way he talks about the aviators helping him with the floaters, I imagine they're like lasering them out of the air. Like, pew, pew is how I imagine it working. I got to be honest. No, please, no optometrist come to me and tell me how wrong that is because I just want to live in a world where that's what's happening there. Yeah, no, nuts. Nuts for him. He is absolutely going to be a Ryder Cup guy. And, you know, just to go back to where we all started with this, with JJ Spahn, it's crazy how 1 week like this can change his life, how 1 year like this can change Ben Griffin's, right? Like, all of a sudden, he's just a Ryder Cup guy. Wyndham Clark would have never had the opportunity to bash up the Oakmont Lockers.
He shouldn't be on the. I bet you his points. He hasn't had a good year. Maybe he's not even like auto in their points. I haven't seen the standings recently, but if I'm Keegan Bradley after seeing those smashed up Lockers, I'm like, sorry, bud, you're a bad glue guy. You're out. You're cooked.
He reeks of a guy who would love to talk about just not wanting that in the team room. He won't say it into a microphone, but he will like text it to 15 golf reporters, and it will be abundantly clear that's how he feels.
Another good week for the captain, Like Keegan Bradley, is he going to play? Ask this question again.
It's so hard. No, it's just so hard to like put yourself in that spot. But yeah, I'd love to see it. If he was a Euro, he'd be in there for sure.
Absolutely. So, anyways, all good, bud.
All right, that was fun. We'll be back maybe before, definitely after the last major of the year. And also, let's be honest, like probably a little Alberta travelogue coming next month as well. Sammy, I love seeing your mug at the golf course. I love it even better when we play. So let's make that happen sometime soon. It's been another edition of The Golf Show, wherever you get your pods.